back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast that answers the question, where did the top quark go? He's Ed.
The top what?
Top quark.
Top quark, yes.
Yes, exactly.
Up quarks, down quarks.
Right, exactly. Quarkscrew.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there is. And it's just as spooky as it looks on the camera. It's spookier than it looks on the camera.
So if you don't know where the top quark is, you got no idea what happened to the strings.
Relative language.
Yeah.
Relative
Number 65.
Language. Number 65. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. Right? And I am Michael Gugis. You can find my rantings on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And as I love to say, you can find me parked at an apex of the track near you, but looking immensely stylish as I do it. Ed, by the way, I'm a genius. Part one. You know why?
Part one?
Part one.
No, no,
dude, there's
been,
all kind of genius.
Been,
there's all kind of
that.
Genius in this podcast, dude. Somebody actually quoted something I wrote on motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And
did they give you credit for it?
Cut and pasted it and linked it to my thing. It was somebody on the ZX6R website when I was talking about Honda's design strategy and how it resembled the McLaren one in Formula One. And they actually cut and pasted it. That's genius.
So you're talking about Honda McLarens and they copied it to a Kawasaki site.
No, Honda, Honda MotoGP.
Oh, okay.
And McLaren Formula One car. It's all about design philosophy.
You know how you always say, and we're back?
Yes.
This time we are back from somewhere.
Where'd we go?
We just got back from reading the instructions, assembling the tool,
right,
and testing the tool and taking photographs of the, and of course the photos were of me, the pretty one.
Oh,
we're doing
God.
We're doing a product eval for Road Racing World.
So
watch for that in the near future.
That's only because I didn't shave this morning and
I didn't shave either. You can see the stubble right here.
And because I'm wearing a tutu.
That's the reason I wasn't going to say yet another reason why we do podcasts,
right,
not video
exactly.
blogs.
Exactly. Hey, look, I don't judge.
Hey, so I went to the Shoei helmet review.
Right. Which I linked to on my blog.
X14, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a nice write-up on the X14 on my website, le-spin.com.
Right.
And Michael copied it, too, because it's, well, we both think it's a good
it's great.
Story.
No, it's great.
I did good.
No, I told you, this is what electronic publishing should be. It's cheap. It allows you to write as long as you want, as long as you need to, in order to get your point across.
Yeah, I wanted to sneak in an explanation of how your helmet absorbs energy and protects
right.
you. And the really important thing about how a helmet isn't just protecting you in the crash.
Right.
It's giving you good visibility
so that
you can see problems and avoid them in the first place.
It makes you less likely to crash in the first
Plus,
place.
Plus, I got that cool picture of the M1 Abrams tank in there.
Yeah, that was
always
that
badass
was not
when
too
you get
shabby.
To have
and
a picture of a tank.
Pictures of you racing back in the day with the
yes.
one of the old
yeah.
Shoeys.
Well,
that
yeah,
was
yeah.
pretty cool. Right?
So,
genius number two. You ready for genius number two?
Go ahead. I'm not done with this genius subject, but
oh,
we'll
no,
go back
no,
and
you
forth.
Go ahead.
I want to hear
I
number
persist.
Two. Oh,
okay.
I insist after you.
By the end of the season,
yes,
winglets, or strakes, as they are technically known, will be banned in MotoGP, Moto2, and Moto3.
Tiki dog!
Tiki! What's up, dog?
It's a Saturday.
I never get tired of saying
Gugis
that.
Gugis is here working on stuff, and so I went over and broke Tiki out.
Tiki!
Which is not a very difficult process. I say Tiki, he comes to the gate, I open the gate.
Right?
So he's hanging out
Look
today
at
with
that,
us.
That man, don't get hit
he's
by the don't
nice
get hit
dog.
By that tail.
Yeah,
that tail knocks some stuff off, man.
So
hey,
the cool thing about the Shoei X14,
okay,
right? If you got a quality helmet that fits right, mm-hmm. you're well protected.
Right.
If you're racing, you should be in a Snell helmet.
Yes.
Those things go without saying.
And yet, we still need to say it.
Well, yeah. Those helmets are getting better. Coffee, Tiki dog. Don't worry, it's decaf. It won't get him too hot. So all of those things the Shoei does beautifully, but the thing that is unique
mm-hmm.
is that you can undo the liner
mm-hmm.
and resnap it in a different way, and it changes the angle of the helmet 4 degrees.
Right.
So that when you're in your full tuck, you can see without the helmet coming down and blocking your view, and that is a fantastic feature, folks. If you are planning to get another race helmet anyway, I strongly recommend you check out that feature that allows you to change the angle. It's totally worth it.
The Bell Star, by the way, the new Bell Star,
mm-hmm.
has a similar feature on the bottom. It allows you, it's actually got these just little divots on the side of the bottom of the faceport, and it allows you to look back a little further without moving your helmet so much. It looks tiny from what I've been told, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, all of those of you guys that are worried about who's lapping you, you need that feature. Well, me, not so much.
Well, many of us are. Many of us also ride on the street, Ed. And, you know, there's a lot of people coming behind you.
So, speaking of that, what? If you're doing most of your riding on the street,
yes,
don't get Brand X's full-on street helmet, race helmet.
Yeah,
get
right?
their one that's more targeted. For as a perfect example, the best aerodynamics for the Shoei X14 is in the full tuck.
Right.
Right? The best aerodynamics for a touring helmet is when you're sitting up straight. There's a subtle difference. And also a full race helmet, they know everybody is going to be wearing earplugs. And so they can not worry so much about noise. But if you're riding on the street, maybe you want to have your earbuds in and listen to music. So they try to keep the noise a little more. Anyway, my point is, think about what kind of riding you're doing and get a helmet that's appropriate.
Like anything anything else with your riding. Figure out what you're doing.
Exactly.
You don't need to be
running.
You don't
need gauntlets on street riding.
You don't need slicks on your street bike.
No, you
know? Jesus Christ.
And another factor, too, is cost. The helmets are, it's amazing. The top-of-the-line helmet is $800.
Yeah.
They cost a little more with the fancy paint job.
Uh-huh.
The white, the plain white paint guy, Tiki Hair,
He's got slobber all over the recorder.
You can save a fair amount of money by just getting a plain single color helmet.
You know,
you can't see the outside of your helmet when you're riding.
Right.
And when you crash, that's what matters.
You know,
not how the thing looks.
You know the real bargain on helmets. You wait 1 year later and wait for the racer. Wait for the racer to switch helmet brands.
Can do closeout helmets from all kinds of companies.
But those are often 3 to 5 years old, okay? And that's not terrible. 5 years is about the cutoff where you want to start thinking about a new helmet. But think about what an HJC and a Lorenzo replica would go for about now.
Be nice.
I am being nice. I'm just saying.
So while I was at the X14 introduction show we did at a local track, they had various other companies there. Alpine Star showed up with some suits and some gloves and some boots. You know, the idea being that, you know, maybe some journalists can do two stories at one time.
Right.
Suzuki brought some motorcycles. So there was lots of stuff going on.
Oh, cool. What'd you ride?
I was on a ZX6, 636.
Oh, cool.
I was riding for MotorcycleDaily.com.
Okay.
And then my deal with them is that I get to then write my own story a week later.
And we talk about it on your podcast.
Yes. And so he had a Kawasaki for me to ride at the same time. So I was doing three stories, mm-hmm. right? Or four if I do a story myself for the Kawasaki.
Okay.
Alpine Star was there, as I mentioned.
Right.
And one of my laces died at the event. Shoelaces on my boots.
Okay.
Okay. And so I went over to the guys to say, hey, since you're here, can you give me the part number for whatever I got to order so I can get this thing?
Right.
And he goes, no, you can't order that part. It has to be stitched back together.
Okay.
It's the fancy lace. And so he says, but give it to me and then I'll ship it back to you. So
nice
they warranted it for me for no charge, and I wanted to give a shout out to those guys and thank them.
I have had really good luck with Alpine Stars, and this is not to give anybody a reach around here, but I've had really good luck with them warranting stuff. I went through one of their nylon. I got to tell you, their nylon toe sliders on their boots, they stink. Okay, I mean, I went through them in half a day. It went through
one. Let me get this straight.
Hold on.
You're grinding something against the asphalt at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make it out of nylon.
Right, or whatever it is.
And you're mad because the thing only lasted 6 miles of grinding.
Believe me. And it went. And of course, once it went through there, it went through the mounting point. So, oh my God.
That was close.
That just reminds you of bad joke.
I'm feeding Tiki
a fake
bacon.
Yeah, but they...
And one of the pieces
landed
my legs.
Next to your real balls. That could have been ugly, man.
Tiki went after it.
Yeah, hey, right?
Good catch, buddy.
It went through the slider, the toe slider, but it also went through the mounting point, which now the boot is useless.
No, it's not. I'll tell you how to fix it.
Well, they fixed it.
They warranted it for you.
Yeah, they fixed it for me, and this is what they probably should be putting on all their boots, quite frankly. They put a magnesium slider or titanium. Which one doesn't spark?
Magnesium.
I got one of those. Never had a problem with it again. Never wore a magnesium slider out again.
So I grinded all the way through a couple of pair of boots to where the screw part is gone, and you can't. And so you just go get 5-minute epoxy gel from the hardware store.
Okay.
And you stick, the gel is kind of gooier, so it goes to the shape that you want it to stay better.
Right.
And you just make a new slider, and this shit's like tank armor. It lasts forever. Doesn't spark, salt, fixes the holes, waterproof.
Excellent.
It's all good. So if you've killed a pair of boots and you want to fix them, you can do that.
See,
but you know, all of the good companies,
deep thinking,
anywhere.
The motorcycle road racing podcast that saves you money.
Dude, if you can't fix it with 5-minute epoxy, you can't fix it.
It's not worth it. I once fixed a relationship with 5-minute epoxy.
Believe it. any company that's got their shit together is going to see warranty repairs as an opportunity as
right.
opposed to a pain in the ass.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
And nobody expects a shoelace to last forever.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I totally expected to pay for shoelaces. That's personally reasonable. And I went over to, you know, just so, hey, I'll take advantage of getting the right part number with no confusion. Like, I don't even know what model of boots they are. I'm sure I could figure it out if I went to the website and looked at the pictures, right? But here's the guy, and then boom, it's free. So thanks very much. It's kind of beneficial to be in the media world
sometimes. You know, it is, but you're right, and it's really funny. I was just thinking of an example where a company absolutely blew it. Now, granted, it wasn't a big company, okay? As a matter of fact, it was a Mexican restaurant in Las Vegas, but we're out there on race weekend. Me and Sandy and Tanya Davidson are having dinner, or actually they're having drinks. We're sitting at the bar. I'm playing video poker. I hit for, I don't know how much money it was, right? But it was worth a set of tires.
Okay.
And they were angry. Now, when you win in a casino, the casino's supposed to make a big deal about it. Woohoo, look what happened. So all the other suckers keep playing, right?
Right.
They were pissed. They were like, the waitress had to go get the manager. The manager's looking at the machine. Finally, here's your damn money, right? Never going back there. Never playing again.
It's easy to do stuff wrong.
Oh, man, isn't it, though?
So, MotoGP testing.
Right. The winglets, I got to finish on this. There's a great picture out there of Dovizioso breaking hard into a corner with that big winglet, like a foot from Valentino Rossi's dangling out leg.
Look, he shouldn't be dangling his damn leg.
I couldn't agree more. But that has become one of the issues. Matt Oxley just wrote about this. Safety. Ducati apparently has been told that if one of their bikes is in a bike-to-bike collision or something like that, and the end of the wing breaks off, they're being black flagged. They've made a new safety rule that says any exposed edge of it has to have a minimum radius.
That's old rule. That's new. That's from the beginning of this season. They changed them.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of 10 of those Moto3 bikes going into a corner with those things hanging off the fairing.
Well, you bring up a good point about, you know, damage to a bike during a race, right? How many, I crashed on the warm-up lap at Road America and lost my bodywork and then did the whole race without my bodywork, but I didn't have a catch fairing. I kept expecting them mm-hmm. to black flag me. They actually yeah. should have, right? You mm-hmm. know, it didn't have a number plate, you know.
It didn't have a number plate?
Well, they lost the fairing completely.
That's so awesome.
I took it all off, right? And this goes to an example. You can't say, well, the rider is out there and he's doing laps and everything's fine and he's smart, right? You know, it must be working. We don't want to take away his race from him because the rider, even me, is susceptible to, I got a race.
Right.
And I'll tell you exactly what happened. I lost my brakes on the cool down lap because in the crash, the master cylinder moved and though the brake hoses were pushing against the fork leg now. And so they were slowly being pushed looser. And on the cool down lap, the lever went to the bar. And it didn't get soft and, you know,
right.
it just
went boom.
It was working and then I had nothing. Ooh. And it was a cool down lap, so it was no problem, right? If that had happened one lap sooner, you know, it would have been a problem.
Yeah.
Of at least some dimension.
Right.
At least for me, maybe for other people.
Ugh.
And so the bike was already illegal because it had no number plate, no catch fairing. And then it had clearly a potential other problem. So, you know, if you get black flag for your bike has a problem, try to take it from the point of view, maybe this just saved us all a
yeah,
lot of hassle.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't get too pissed off.
I don't have to write another damn obit.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Okay.
So, MotoGP testing.
We learned nothing.
Well, it did muddle the results, right? If Lorenzo had spanked everybody again,
right.
It would have been an easy headline. But I think we learned that the purpose of testing is for people to try different stuff and work things out. And you're not going to get, you know, they weren't there trying to qualify for a race. They were there trying to test shit. And as soon as they solved the problem, they didn't then go out and try to do the best lap they could on it.
No.
They then went to work on the next problem.
Next problem.
Right?
Right.
You know, and so maybe they solved the problem with you know, and had an old tire on when they could have gone their best. But now they need to go work on the next thing. And then the thing they tried first made them slower. And so then the new tire didn't show good because they had this other problem and they came back in the pits and blah, you know, and it's just not the same routine as you're all up for a race weekend.
Right.
There's a certain schedule. You know what's going to happen, right? And you're into it. And that you get up in the morning, all three mornings, oh, fuck, it's raining again. Right? That takes a little bit of wind out of your sail no matter what, right?
How fast I got to go?
Yeah.
All right, girls, time to go. It's I got to get to work.
Well, right? If you know in a half an hour I need to go do this thing, it's easier to be ready for it than in a half an hour there's a 50% chance. So don't take your leathers off, but go get lunch. It's just not the same, right?
Now, there's a couple of things, too. Phillip Island, you got to test there.
Because it was really wise to, especially with new tires.
With new tires.
They were very smart to do it. It was actually really good that they got sketchy weather. That's really more useful to the important stuff.
Not really.
You're wrong.
I think it would have been better if it had been really hot. Because
hot, it's easy. They know what to do when really hot.
No.
That's what you get most of the time.
Then how did Bridgestone screw it up so bad a couple of years ago?
They didn't go test there at all.
And okay, so I would have preferred really hot, but I can see your point about sketchy weather.
If
now
they
you can
had
test the
all of
the
their
rains.
Testing there in the off season with no rain, they would have been in trouble the first time it rained in the series.
Granted.
And that would have been a bigger problem. So this is the lesser of the evils, and it's really a positive.
But the problem trying to read the tea leaves here. Is that it's Phillip Island. Phillip Island is always unusual. It's always weird.
That's why you got to go there.
But it doesn't tell you anything about how it's going to work at the other tracks.
But they're going to two other normal tracks.
Well, if Sepang is normal, I suppose. Qatar is better. But you know how weird? Here's how weird Phillip Island is. In World Superbike, Suzuki has 4 wins in the past 4 seasons. I think since 2011. Okay? Of those 4 wins... Two of their last 4 wins have come at Phillip Island. Their last win was the first race at Phillip Island, and then they weren't anywhere for the rest of the season. It's just a weird track. It's just a very unusual track where weird stuff happens.
Gee, Michael, I don't know if we all know that yet. Can you give us more evidence?
I got plenty of evidence.
Okay.
I actually looked
it
up. You want to know?
Let's check this out.
Vinales was...
It's been common for crews... to start the bike up after they've worked on the engine run it through the gears.
Right.
On a rear stand with the rear wheel spin and thing.
We didn't know that?
We did know that. And the reason is that they can change the gearboxes. They can change the ratios. So if they do that, it's a good thing to, of course, you test it by hand before you put the transmission back in.
Right.
And after it's in the bike, you spin the shafts and make sure it's working.
Right.
But if you run it through all the gears, you're 100% sure. So the new thing now is that you'll see the bike is idling on the stand.
Right.
And the mechanics will go to the back of the bike and spin the rear wheel in the normal rolling direction by hand and then click it into gear. And so my presumption, thank you, is that what's different is the constant mesh transmissions.
The seamless non-dual clutch transmission.
So if you go to a... non-seamless transmission, your bike is idling in neutral.
Right.
The pinion shaft is spinning because the clutch basket is attached to it.
Okay.
The clutch basket is attached to the transmission.
Let me
clarify this. If the clutch is engaged, the pinion shaft might start spinning.
Okay.
Okay. Either way, what you got is you got something spinning.
Right.
And the other parts, the output shaft, are not spinning. So when you click it into gear, that's why it goes k-dunk.
Right.
And then it all starts spinning. Okay?
Right.
And that's why when you miss a shift, or you know, you try to pull away from a stop in neutral,
right.
And you rev the pieces out of the bike, it's better to wait till it comes back to idle
right.
before you click it into gear.
Well, isn't there a little bit of the automatic transmission effect when the oil in the clutch basket is spinning?
No, the clutch baskets aren't in the oil anymore.
Oh, they're not?
No, they're up high now. The reason they moved the clutch assembly up is to make the engine shorter.
Right.
And then to get them out of the oil so you don't have the parasitic drag. So they have an oil spray hitting on them.
You've got one of those new fancy bikes with a foot shifter for the gear lever, aren't
you? So it's a little bit of a dunk when you put the bike into gear.
Right.
And so my assumption is that because these new transmissions are more delicate, they're just trying to save a little bit of work. and by spinning the thing up. Or here's the other possibility.
Ready?
The mechanics are just fucking with everybody.
Yeah.
Right?
The way just doing something because it's fun.
You know how Roswell got the reputation for being the space alien center of the world?
Yeah.
The Air Force was doing studies on high altitude ejections. They, you know, when they were starting to make jets that could fly higher, they needed to find out how the guys would be. So they had mannequins in spacesuits, and they were launching them out of rockets and whatever, and then collecting them. And so the mannequins were about, you know, two-thirds size of a human body, maybe a little smaller sometimes. And there's some sergeant and a private in a Jeep that got to go out in the fucking desert and find this thing that parachuted down from maybe 100,000 feet. Who knows how far it went, right? So it's really easy to see what happened. Some local saw this little spaceman coming down in a silver suit. And then the sergeant and the private are like, hey, watch this. Hey, sorry, sir. Can't go over there. No, got to look away. Got to take. They're just screwing with them. Mechanics love to do that shit all the time. So that could be the thing. But I think it more has to do with the, transmission.
Do you think the listeners will buy that?
At Sears?
No. Do you think they'll buy that explanation?
Who?
The listeners.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because I told it.
Let's hope so, yeah. Because our alien masters are not going to be happy if they're found out.
So,
I spend a lot of time in front of the classroom just laughing. 30 students are dead silent, and I'm just cracking up. I told them.
That's a sad thing, Michael.
No, I told them, look out. I am comfortable with this. If you are not, I'm really sorry to hear that. I'm giving you the grade.
So, another neat thing about the Phillips Island test with this funny weather,
right.
It was common for there to be few riders on track.
Right.
And so they were able to film bikes going by one at a time. And mm-hmm. they were at turn four or one of the right-hand U-turns. And they had the Ducati, the Honda, and the Yamaha go by one at a time. So you could hear the sound of that bike and no other sound around. We talked about the differences in the sounds of the Yamahas and the others. The Honda sounded much more violent. The Ducati had the ba-ba-ba as it got back on the gas, and the Yamaha had the smoothest sound. With the new electronics, they all pop on the D-cell, or at least they all three did when they were entering that corner. And to me, that's like a basic mapping issue that shouldn't be a problem. So maybe that was just the first lap, and they're still working out the bugs of the map they're going to run in the rain. I don't know.
Okay.
But even the Yamaha popped on the D-cell. That's usually a lean condition. And then they all sounded way rougher. Even the Yamaha, it still had the low in the RPM grunt sound that it always had,
mm-hmm.
but it had a more of a rah, rah, rah kind of thing going on. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be electronic. So when you start watching the races on TV, folks, try to listen to the sound and see what differences you hear from last year. That's going to be a clue to how they're doing with electronics.
Well, a couple of other things about the Yamaha. Rossi and Lorenzo both say they're starting with the 2015 chassis or something closer to the 2015 chassis. That thing with the tank in the rear.
Tank partial.
They've just given that up. They said that's not going to work. Because the mission...
I'd like to know what else is different from 2015 to 2016. It doesn't seem like much.
Not much. Yep. Not much. But, you know, I think Michelin still has a problem with that front tire. They had, the last day of the test was a crash fest. And
half the field crashed. But
all of them
it
were
was,
front ends.
Yes. Just like in the race. And it was in the afternoon when the track was cooling down. And mm-hmm. they all said, you know, that's a problem that we have at Phillip Island. Also, Michelin has not brought out any dual compound tires at a track that absolutely has it. That was a single compound tire.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% sure.
Okay.
So what Michelin accomplished at this test, according to Michelin, was they have finalized the profiles, which is a big important thing. And what I think is going on is that they've focused on the profile and the main compound. Putting a little bit of softer compound on one side of a tire, I think, is a simple thing to do. They know how to do that.
That's a simple thing to do, and they know how to do it. The problem is, if you're at Phillip Island and you get it just slightly wrong, you wind up with the stupid 10-lap heat, you know, without all the craziness again.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The short race was because the rear tires couldn't go the distance on the left side. If you get the right side compound wrong, it's not going to have an effect like that.
So, okay.
Okay. Let's get the details straight.
All right.
Okay.
If you must.
The full 19 permanent riders, all 19 permanent riders, were on the same second and a half on day two.
Wow.
And the difference didn't change much on day three. Now, part of that is because they're all still testing and all the things we talked about testing, But it seems apparent that, at least for now, the tires and the electronics have brought the field closer together. And that's going to be exciting for all of us. It's going to mean it's going to take longer for the aliens to start to stretch away. It's going to mean there's going to be more battle. When one alien does check out, there's going to be a crazy fight for third place that we get to watch, right? So that's a really nice thing.
Did you, what do you think about Vinales? That was pretty impressive.
It's very impressive.
He says he could have done 28.
Yep.
You know, but then
what's
again,
less impressive is that his teammate's not there also. So the team is still working through some stuff, but they're going to have the full seamless. They had one of the testers. Mm-hmm. Right now, their seamless is only up, not going down.
Right.
And the tester was running the full seamless, and they say they're going to have it this year.
At Qatar, at the next test.
Well, the team manager said he will have it this year. Okay. You know, he's not going to stick his foot in his mouth. The riders are like, yeah, we're going to have it at the, you know, the riders are focusing on the most positive, and the team manager is trying to be a little more like Lynn Jarvis and go,
Be realistic about this.
Yeah, because, well, all the team managers are like, God damn it, Lynn's getting all the love from Deep Thinking. I've got to step up my, I saw something interesting. When you go to a club race,
yes,
and the crash bike comes back in the pits, mm-hmm. Everybody's like, oh, kind of disappointed. Right. You see it in their body language. You know, you don't need to hear words, right? You go to a national level, you see the same thing, except the guy's wearing all the same shirts.
Okay.
When your crashed MotoGP bike comes back to the pits, they look exactly the same. Also, except they're wearing the same shirt, pants, and shoes. It always sucks to have your expensive, nice, perfect bike. Especially those poor guys probably just finished putting it together. Like 2 minutes, boom, right? And these guys don't seem like club racer guys, track day guys, right? Oh, I need a new clip-on, right?
Right.
These things come back. It's like, oh, fuck, dude. Go get a frame.
Right, exactly. We'll see if we can salvage the gas cap, right? Those things are destroyed. You know, it's funny. I mentioned for another publication, I interviewed Bruce Flanders, the motorsports announcer. He's done the Long Beach Grand Prix ever since it was Formula One back in the day, right? Even Formula One back in the day was trying to save money on shipping costs. So when the cars came out of the container, they were mostly disassembled. And they didn't have wheels. They didn't ship tires. The teams didn't ship tires. They'd come on these narrow,
those wheels are really, really big, and they used to be bigger.
If
you put smaller wheels on it, it makes sense.
Yeah, they would come with these tiny little wheels. He said basically a tub would come out of the shipping container, and it would take the guy two days to put the car together. You know,
that's bad economics. I mean, for the guy writing the check for the shipping, it's all good.
Right.
But the overall expense, take it apart, pack it up. Take it out. That's a lot of. A fair amount of that work was probably being done anyway.
Yeah.
Right. They were going to take it apart anyway. Right. So then they take it apart and put it. But still, oh man. What if you show up and half your crew flight was delayed?
Right.
And you don't have time to put your car together.
Yeah.
They're not doing that anymore, right?
Now they just, I don't know. Yeah. I really don't. I haven't been to a flyaway F1 race in forever. Tiki. Ed. Ask me about the difference between MotoGP and World Superbike.
No, I don't want to ask you because you're...
Oh, thanks for asking.
Some kind of crazy answer.
Thanks for asking.
I'm going to have to
dispute. Here's the story. A couple of years
I'm
back...
I'm just going to pet Tiki.
We had MotoGP and World Superbike up at Laguna, right?
Okay, yes.
MotoGP, the Ducati MotoGP team, has a sort of museum kind of construction behind their garage. So it's like, and it's, you know, it's hospitality for the crew and everything.
Right.
But it looks like a building. There's like rooms and there's a hallway and the hallways have art in them. They're black and white prints of Ducati race bikes and shit like that. It's freaking awesome, right? I go back a few months later for the World Superbike and I swear to God, Tom Sykes has a pair of his whitey-tidy underwear hanging out in the back behind his garage. I'm like, oh, man, I like Tom, but I do not need to know what kind of underwear he wears. That's the difference. Now, you know, I'm not saying one is better or
worse. How long
ago
was this?
2 years.
Oh.
Like 2 years ago. I'm not saying that one is better and one is worse. I'm just saying, it really does, you know.
There's still a difference, eh?
Oh, yeah, okay. There's a difference. I'm very excited about World Superbike starting next weekend, you know. That should be a lot of fun. I'm just bummed about the big time gap, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
And you just got to find something to bitch about, don't you?
Oh, there's always a complaint. There's always a complaint, dude. Oh, man, what else we got?
I think we're pretty good. It's 30 minutes already.
Are we at 30 minutes?
Yeah, and we got stuff to do.
Do you have a two minute board?
Be nice to dogs.
That's a good one. I had another one. Who was the guy? Oh man, I was so excited about this too. Two minute board.
So excited. I can't remember what it was.
But it was exciting. I'll come back to it. Hey,
we don't need to hear any more Michael grunting.
No. God, and I was really upset because I was very excited about this 2 minute board. It was just some racer guy who did something that was just really cool. You know, like what's his name? Sam Verderico or Verderico or whatever his name was. It was just, like I said, just a really cool thing. You know, it's just. Damn it, it's nice.
Really cool, but we can't remember it
now because we go. I suffer from CRS. They're a
definition of deep thinking,
right?
Aloha.
Oh, I know what it was. Oh, wait. I know it's something else. And I want to put out a call to our listenership.
Okay.
We need help, and more than mental help, which is very clear that we need. I want to design a logo for deep thinking. And here's what I want.
But it's a radio show. No one will see
it. It's okay. It's going to be for the stickers.
What stickers?
The stickers that are going to be, we're going to make.
Oh, man, we can't become, what's the term where the rock bands don't want to become corporate? They sold out.
Exactly.
We don't want to be like a
rock
band.
We're not selling the stickers. We're just, dude, we're infecting the world one brain at a time.
If we're not selling them, who's paying for them?
Our listeners will.
They're selling them.
They send us treats. They'll make stickers for us.
But
here's the design I want. Okay, what I want is like a line drawing of a road racing bike. Okay, rider on it, knee on the ground, hanging off, all Marquez style. Okay, but instead of having a helmet, it's just some big Mars Attacks Morbo, the news monster from Futurama type brains on the top of the rider's head. And so that will get the idea across. Deep
that
thinking.
You should ride without not only a helmet, but also not a skull.
No skull.
I think it's a bad idea.
I think it's definitely a bad
idea.
There's
plenty of people that think that way already.
And you know what,
we don't need
Ed,
to encourage that.
The quicker they're out of the gene pool, the better we are. He's Ed Sorbo. That's Tiki over there.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.